prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
Good morning. It is Truth Revolution. I'm Dave, and with me is Pastor Jeff of Revolution Church.
Where faith and reason meets.
Right. And we are being, we got a, I just don't know what to say.
I'm not interested in what people believe. We're interested in the truth. Right. We believe there's something out there that is real.
Right.
And we want to know what that is.
And we have a sponsor today.
What?
Yes. Today's show is being brought to you by the letter D.
That's right. Okay, you're right. Because we've been studying the acronym CRACT, which we came up with to help us understand how to resolve potential Bible contradictions. People say all the time, oh, the Bible's full of contradictions and it's got problems. And over the last few weeks, we've been showing how to resolve these things. And we use the acronym CRACT.
Mm-hmm.
C stands for context. You got to take the Bible in context.
Right.
R stands for revealed, meaning you have to let the Holy Spirit reveal certain things to you. And there's certain things you will not understand apart from the Holy Spirit revealing them to you. If that sounds spooky and creepy to you, you need to understand, you need to listen to the whole show. All right. On that date. So go back one, two, three, whatever, three or four shows ago.
Listen to the whole series. It's like a 5-week series.
Yeah. And with author's intent is the A in CRACT, which means you have to get back. What was the author intending? You know, before you say, oh, this guy's contradicting. Look, what was he trying to say? What was his intention? It doesn't matter what you think it was. What was he saying? You have to give it credibility is the next C. Credibility, like use common sense. Give the Bible some credit. Don't assume it's just wrong. Just like you would give any historical book some credit and assume maybe this author knows what he's talking about.
Right.
And then K is knit together, which we did last week, as well as the E, meaning early meaning in manuscripts. Now, I just want to do one more thing from knit together. Can I do that?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. We did this last week, but I want to give another example of knit together, because knit together says that the Bible from the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, to the New Testament, where Jesus was, is all knit together. It's one big grand scheme. And if you don't understand the grand scheme, you're not going to get it. We pulled up this thing called The Atheist Experience. It's a public television show done in another town. And they said this when a guy called in and said that he believed in the Bible.
I mean, do you believe that the Bible is like literally true and infallible?
Yes, I do.
So then you're a proponent of slavery and stoning unruly children and killing homosexuals? I mean, because all that's in the Bible.
Well, you're taking the Bible out of context.
Yes. Oh, no, I beg to differ.
You know, I beg to differ. And I mean, the poor Christian on the line there, he was trying to defend it somehow. And the atheist knew I'm not taking it out of context. And he wasn't taking it out of context. The problem was he wasn't allowing the Bible to be knit together. You have to understand slavery to understand certain things. You have and why unruly children would be stoned. You have to let the Bible be knit together.
Right. And that's the thing that's so good about this CRACT acronym. Is that, you know, if you read it without these letters, without using the things that you've put in this acronym, of course it's going to look confusing and weird.
Yeah.
But when you put it together with understanding and using this this context, I mean, everything actually looks right.
Absolutely. And you know, the early meaning in manuscript, we talked about that last time. You have to know what the early meaning of the word was. Slavery. He says, oh, you're a proponent of the slavery because you believe in the Bible. He has no idea what the early meaning of slavery meant. When they used the word slavery back then, it did not mean what it means today. And so you have to know what that means. Now, the Christian who called in and said he believed in the Bible, he didn't know that. And the atheist on the show, he didn't know that.
Right.
And the problem is we've got two people arguing about something neither one of them know about.
Right, and they were both arguing from a position of ignorance.
Exactly. All right, so let me give an example. Okay, it says here that God contradicts himself in Genesis 1:29. Because what does he say there, Dave?
Well, he says that people should only eat vegetables and fruit.
Okay, but in Genesis 9, he allows them to eat meat.
Right. What's up with that?
What's up? Only vegetables. Now you can eat meat. Is that a contradiction? God even is contradicting himself? Well, you have to understand how the Bible is knit together. And Norman Geisler, he said it this way. Sometimes critics of scripture forget the principle of progressive revelation. God does not reveal everything at once, nor does he always lay down the same conditions for every period of time. Therefore, some of his later revelation will supersede his former statements. And this is the answer to that.
Right.
Just because God is doing something different doesn't mean he's contradicting himself. Later revelation supersedes earlier revelation. Things I do with my children now will contradict what I told them earlier. When my son was 6 months old, I did not let him play outside by himself. Right. Now I do.
Right. Anything that comes from us as humans being able to understand or being able to handle certain situations?
Oh, I think there's all sorts of different reasons why God changes things. And you'd have to look at the specific situation to know what the answer to that is. But the answer in general is that God doesn't work the same way through all times.
Right.
Later revelation replaces previous revelation. This isn't a contradiction. It's simply an evolution or a change. And that's all it is. I mean, all kinds of things change. Mankind was created perfect. Now we're sinners. Eventually we'll be the former sinners who are now perfect.
Right.
You know, change is not a contradiction. And that's what we have to get across here. Okay. I want to jump to the early meaning manuscripts.
Okay.
To understand why Bible doesn't have contradictions, you have to understand the early meaning of words, the early manuscripts in the Bible. And we've talked about this one a number of times on the show because it looks like a serious contradiction that people bring up quite regularly. And in Mark 15:25, it says that Jesus was crucified at 9:00. However, John claims he was on trial at noon.
Right.
So
I remember this. We've discussed this one quite a few times.
Yeah. You know, was Jesus crucified before he was put on trial? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mark 15, it was 9 in the morning when they crucified him. John 19 says it was the day of Passover about noon. But you have to understand, actually, using an acronym, Dave, you have to use three different pieces here. Credibility. You have to say, okay, at least I'm going to give these guys some credit. They weren't so stupid as when they forgot when Jesus was crucified.
Right.
Okay, and so I'm going to give them some credit and look into it deeper. Second, you have to know the context and the early meaning of these words. You have to understand their cultural context and what the words meant, because the social and geographical context was that there were different time systems available for them than there was for us. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You and I, we use a time system that starts at midnight.
Right. It's almost, but not the same as, you know, between us and Arizona or Indiana.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the exactly same thing.
No, but it's a similar idea.
It's a similar idea.
Right. I could say, hey, I want to meet you on a phone call. Actually, I had a phone call this week with someone and I said, I want to meet you at 10 o'clock. Now that was really 11 o'clock for them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was 9:00 for me.
Right.
And that's not a contradiction. And this isn't a contradiction either, because Mark was using Jewish time, which starts at 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. John was using Roman time, which starts at midnight. And so when Mark says the third hour, he means 9 a.m. When John says the sixth hour, he means 6 a.m.
Right.
And so Jesus was on trial at 6 a.m. and crucified at 9 a.m. So it totally makes sense.
Totally.
Totally makes sense. And anyway, now we're going to get into the dialect. Okay, the point of the early meaning manuscript is that you have to get to the real meaning of the words. You can't just assume you know what it means. You have to get to the original Greek, what the original Greek meant, what the term was used like 2,000 years ago, not what you think it means in the year 2012.
But that means you got to do some studying or stuff.
Well, yeah, it takes a little work every now and then. But okay, Dave, dialect. Let's go ahead and read my little paragraph there, would you? And tell us what dialect means.
Okay, dialect. The Bible is literature.
Oh.
And it must be read as such.
Uh-huh.
There are many different genres of literature present in the scriptures, and we should identify the intended style before making assumptions and interpretations.
The Bible's literature.
There you go.
You know what drives me nuts?
I could name off a list of things, but...
Okay. One of the many things that drives me nuts is when people just, they go, okay, well, this is the Bible, and so I'm going to read it unlike anything else I've ever read.
Right.
And I'm going to treat this in a completely different way. And I'm not going to allow it to have hyperbole. I'm not going to allow it to use figures of speech. I'm not going to allow... It is a book of literature.
Mm-hmm.
Friends, please pay attention to me. It is a book. It uses different genres, different styles, different types of speaking. And it's written to normal people by normal people.
Right. But wouldn't you say that if people squeeze... all that, if people don't squeeze all that stuff out of it, then you're not really, you know, the Bible isn't holy anymore, and it's just another book and yada yada.
Well, I think that's some people's fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, if I say that there's hyperbole in the Bible, right, where does it end? And well, it ends when the author stops using his hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
You have to read it. And just read it like you would read a book. People always say, well, how do you know when he's using hyperbole and when he's not? How do you know when I'm being sarcastic?
Right.
It's obvious
when
most
his mouth
of the time.
Is open.
You know, I mean, it's most of the time when you're reading a book or when someone says something, you don't take them completely literal all the time. If I say, man, I am like $1 million in debt right now.
Right.
You'd be like, okay, Jeff, $1 million. Let's
lot.
Sit down. Let's add this up because you need to collect $1 million. No, you'd be like, oh man, things are rough, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't literally mean $1 million in debt unless I'm Donald Trump, you know?
Right. Or I'm so hungry I could eat a horse.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. Very few people who are listening to this show have actually said, I'm so hungry I could eat a horse, and someone actually started dishing a horse up for them.
Yeah.
I mean, but for some reason we go to the Bible and it says, I'm hungry enough to eat a horse, and
ooh,
people are like,
he ate a horse.
Oh, I'm going to be critical. You could not eat a horse. Like, really? Do you really think that's what they meant?
Right.
For example, Galatians 4:3, it says, we were in slavery under the elemental spiritual forces of the world. But some atheists or some Bible critics will say, but Paul and his readers were never slaves.
Right.
He says, we were in slavery, but they weren't in slavery. Well, what's the solution here? He was speaking spiritually.
Of course.
Or, I mean, it's like, I want to say, oh, isn't that convenient? It's just spiritual when it doesn't really fit your interpretation of the Bible. That's what people would say. But like, mm-hmm, no, it's not just spiritual because it doesn't fit my interpretation. It's spiritual because that's what he's saying.
Right. And you got to use common sense.
Yes, this is his genre. He's speaking with some emphasis here to show the seriousness, mm-hmm, of their spiritual condition. We were in slavery under the elemental spiritual forces of the world. I'm going to read you a quote. Let me get back on the other side of this break.
Okay.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. We're going to go from there. But hey, run over to the website, truthrevolution.tv.
That's right. You can check out past shows.
Yep. You can get you can give donations on there.
And you can listen to this show in half an hour or so.
That's right. This is going to be posted like right after the radio show.
Uh-huh.
And we have another sometimes 5, 10, 15 minutes online that you don't get on air.
A little bonus.
So check it out online. And get ready to come over to Revolution Church, 10:15 a.m. this morning. Looking for a Christmas Eve service? Check out Revolution Church on Monday, December 24th, Christmas Eve, 6 p.m. With rocking Christmas music, a fun children's program, and teaching that actually applies to your life, this may be the best decision you've made all year. Check us out online at salinarevolution.com. Everyone is invited, so check us out online at salinarevolution.com. Again, that's salinarevolution.com. Revolution Church, Christmas Eve, 6 p.m.
This is Dave
and Jeff
from the Truth Revolution Show. We want to invite you to Revolution Church this Sunday at 10:15 a.m. Revolution Church welcomes everyone and every question.
If you want to explore who God is, come join us.
And bring any question you have, because we have answers.
Why does the dryer eat my socks? Can I get married but not have a mother-in-law? How much is a long-distance call to the moon?
Well, we don't have answers for all your questions, just the important ones.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning at 10:15 a.m.
www.salinarevolution.com.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back from that commercial break.
Yeah.
And we are talking about how to rightly divide the Bible into truth.
To interpret it correctly.
Interpret it correctly. And just using common sense. Today
Dave,
we're talking about dialect.
Dave, It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Well, what was it?
It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness.
Well, which one was it?
It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity.
You're just not making any sense.
It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness.
Dude.
It was a spring of hope, and it was the winter of despair.
Never mind.
Contradictions! All right, what's that a quote from? That is a quote, my friend, from Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities, which most of you probably read in junior high.
Right.
Duality was one of the themes explored by that book.
You think?
Nobody in your junior high class was taught, this book's full of contradictions. It even opens with contradictions. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. No, to give the author some credit, they understand the literature used here is that of duality. They're trying to show two things, best of times and the worst of times. It was a historical novel told from the omniscient point of view about the revolution in France. And the aristocracy was doing great. It was the best of times. And the common man, it was the worst of times.
Right.
And they're trying to show that duality.
It's a literary device.
It's a literary device. And we can use literary devices, and that's okay. You know, but for some reason, people get to the Bible and are like, don't use a literary device. This is the Bible.
Right. Let me point something out real quick.
Yeah.
God created us in his own image.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, you know, the Bible was written, inspired by God, through man, whom he created in his own image.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are able to write with literary devices. God gave that to us.
Yeah.
So what's to say that God can't use literary devices through us?
That's a good point, you know. And I mean, the answer to, we spoke of Galatians 4:3 before the break. It says, while we were in slavery under the elemental spiritual forces of the world. And some people say, well, you were never under slavery. Right. Why would Paul say that? Well, Paul is giving here a metaphor, a figure of speech applied to something not literally applicable. You know, the Bible says a mighty fortress is our God. No one thinks God is actually a concrete
big
building up in heaven, you know, or there's a euphemism using a milder expression in place of a more offensive one. For instance, you could say someone, instead of saying they died, you could say, oh, they passed away. Well, here, Paul is using euphemism. He says, we were in slavery under the spiritual forces. Well, this is a euphemism, using something that's milder in term for something more offensive. A more offensive way to say this is, look, you followed Satan and all satanic ways. You couldn't control your disgusting, flesh-filled, sinful, evil desires because we all are pathetic losers spiritually.
That's pretty harsh.
That's pretty harsh, yeah. Right? Instead, Paul just chose to say, look, we're slaves to those spiritual forces. Right. Like, you can't, what does a slave do? You don't have freedom. You're totally subject to
it. And honestly, to people that understand that, because we should understand that, to people that understand that, because that is written throughout the entire Bible about how we're slaves to sin.
That's right.
You know, but in different ways.
That's right.
So we should understand that. And by saying it the way he said it, it didn't take as long to say. And he got his point across.
Exactly. But you have to learn the dialect, what type of language and literature he's using. Okay, let me give you a big, big promise from the Bible that doesn't always come true.
Okay.
This is one that should bug people. Okay, are you ready here? Proverbs 29:17 says, discipline your children and they will give you peace.
Wow.
But Dave, some people discipline their children properly and their children are still disasters.
Uh-huh.
Is the Bible wrong?
Hmm.
No, the question is...
You had me doubting for a second.
The question is, what type of literature is it here? And the answer is, Proverbs is wisdom literature.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdom literature demonstrates principles. It doesn't give you rules and promises. So when Proverbs says, discipline your children and it'll give you peace, you're not saying, hey, here's a promise. Every time you discipline them properly, they're going to give you peace. Guarantee.
Right.
That's not what it's saying.
You don't
want
to stand on that guarantee.
No. What it is saying is, you know, generally speaking, it's true. If you discipline your children properly, they're going to turn out okay. Right. I mean, that's wisdom literature. That's the genre it's using. It's not a promise.
You're not going to see immediate results from the sweat and tears that you're spilling today.
Thank you. You know, in the literary terms, we would call this an archetype. It's a generalized idea, a model of a person, object, or concept from which similar instances are derived. For instance, the skater kid who's depressed and wears black, right? That's an archetype, right? Or the high school quarterback who's popular and drives a sports car.
His perfect smile.
Right. I mean, those are generalized models of persons from which similar instances are derived, right? Generally speaking, you can picture that. Well, generally speaking, you can picture that if you discipline your children, they'll give you peace. That's a general model. Howard Hendricks, in a book by him and a family member, he said this, before ever launching into a study of a book in the Bible, the first thing a reader needs to know is what that book's author meant it to be. In other words, what kind of literature was he writing? What literary form did he employ? You see, literary genre is crucial to interpretation.
Amen.
Yeah. And he actually, in Hendrix lists in his book, 14 different genres of literature in the Bible.
Really?
14 genres,
that's
man.
Huge.
That's a lot of genres. Some are apocalyptic, biographical, encomium, which is like singing praises and rehearsing like things God did in glowing terminology, parable, tragedy, satire.
Satire?
Satire.
In the Bible?
Yeah, seriously. Let's look at a satire, okay?
Okay.
Satire is often a graphic form of literature where a person, a group, or a society's downfalls are ridiculed in order to cause embarrassment and encourage change. Okay, so an example might be, you know, we come and we go, the United States is in debt up to their neck.
Right.
Their creditors are cutting their throats and bleeding them dry. Now, has any congressman actually had their cutthroat and been bled dry yet?
I hope not.
Not literally, but like
for their sake.
Right. We're using this satirical language to cause embarrassment to show us like, man, you guys we are really in debt. Something has to change. Well, if you look up Ezekiel 34, it says that the leaders of Israel, they don't heal sick people. They don't search for the lost. Well, does that mean no leader ever did that?
Right.
No. If we found an example of a leader of Israel searching for a lost person in at that time, it wouldn't be a contradiction. God is saying these things, Ezekiel is saying these things to shame Israel, to try to get them to change. The point is, you're failing and you're not doing as good as you should. That's all. But it's done in a way to help them understand the seriousness of it.
Right. And it's devices that parents even use with their kids.
Oh, you know? Yeah, absolutely. If your friend jumped off a bridge, would you?
Right.
Right? I mean, you don't literally think your kid's going to jump off a bridge.
Or your kid's friend is going to jump off a bridge.
Right. You're just trying to make the satirical point, man, don't be such a failure, man. Or when a parent says, you didn't do your homework. I guess you're hoping for a job as a grocery bagger for the rest of your life. That'll work out well.
Right.
By the way, I'll take plastic, not paper. You know, we would understand that parent is not prophesying, but they're trying to incite change.
Right.
Right. The parent is not saying, I really think my child wants to be a grocer. I really think that's his chosen career. No, they're just trying to embarrass the child to get him to wake up. And that's what's happening in the book of Ezekiel. And so readers, we have to understand that in the Bible, there are forms of syntax, there's rules of grammar, types of literature, and we have to observe all these things. We have to understand that writers back then had different rules when the Bible's written than we even do today. I mean, you didn't have to have exact quotes then 2,000 years ago.
You didn't.
If you just paraphrased what someone said, that was totally acceptable.
Right. Nowadays, when somebody can look things up and you know, you've got information right at your fingertips,
you want an exact quote.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can't turn a paper into your college professor and say, I kind of paraphrased what the researchers said. I mean, like, I would prefer a quote. It's pretty close.
Right. Well, you get an A.
that just wouldn't work. But 2,000 years ago, the way they wrote, they're totally acceptable. Zechariah 12:10, it says, they will look on me, the one they have pierced. Well, John 19 quotes that scripture, but it says, they will look on the one they have pierced.
Right.
He cut out the whole on me part. Is he misquoting it? Well, no. Because a misquote doesn't mean it was a mistake. I mean, I guess you could say he's misquoting the exact words, but it wasn't considered a mistake back then. He's trying to communicate to you who Jesus was using that quote.
Right, and it gets the very point across.
He accomplished his goal.
Mm-hmm.
We have to ask, what was his intention? What type of dialect did they use back then? This was an appropriate method of communication when he wrote it. If it wasn't an appropriate mode of communication when he wrote it, then we could say there was a problem, but it was totally okay. You can't apply standards from 2012 to things that were written then. You can't apply standards from then to things that were written in 2012. You have to say, was a book written in 1750 okay for 1750? If they quoted sources the way a person in 1750 is supposed to, then that was fine. You don't apply technical standards from one decade onto another.
Right, and people would obviously get confused because you pick up a book that was written in 1750, and you tell me if you don't get a little bit lost here and there.
Well, I mean, the whole point is, it's really okay to paraphrase, right, which is what they're, even today, generally speaking, it's okay to paraphrase. Let me read, actually, Dave, would you read a quote from President Obama that we got from his election night speech, 2012? This is from his election speech. Let's go ahead and read this from Obama.
He says, democracy in a nation of 300 million can be noisy and messy and complicated. We have our own opinions. Each of us has deeply held beliefs. And when we go through tough times, when we make big decisions as a country, it necessarily stirs passion, stirs up controversy. That won't change after tonight, and it shouldn't. These arguments we have are a mark of our liberty, and we can never forget that as we speak, people in distant nations are risking their lives right now just for a chance to argue about the issues that matter.
Okay, that's a pretty good quote.
Mm-hmm.
Would anyone point at me and say, you misquoted him, if I said, President Obama said that we have different viewpoints and that's okay?
I don't think anybody would be able to do that.
You'd say, yeah, you basically captured the essence of what President Obama said.
Right, and that was a paraphrase.
It was a paraphrase.
Pretty much.
I didn't quote him exactly. Mm-hmm. I didn't even come close to quoting him exactly, but I gave the general concept of what he said. That's it. Period. I did not misquote him. In scriptures, when they're quoting the Old Testament, a lot of times will give the general concept. They won't give you the exact quote, and that is okay. So here's another one. Okay. Form of literature. Leviticus 11:6. It says that rabbits chew their cud.
Well, rabbits don't chew cud.
Yeah. Rabbits don't chew their cud. We know today. Factual. Scientists know. Rabbits don't chew their cud. Is this a problem?
Well, some people might see it as it is. I know that the people over at infidels.org saw it as a problem.
They see it as a problem big right? time. But the answer is, it should be noticed that rabbits appear to chew their cud.
Yes.
They even eat their own dung. Disgusting. That being said,
I have a dog that does that.
You do?
Yeah.
That's so gross. Why do you keep them around?
No. Just don't lick me in the face.
That being said, Leviticus, where this was written,
mm-hmm,
it is not a science book. Okay, Dave? It should not be read as though it were in the science textbook genre.
Right. But it is the Bible and it is truthful. So how come they didn't know that?
Well, it doesn't matter whether they knew it or not. It wasn't written to be a science book.
Right.
If I write the sunrise and I'm not trying to describe the technical perspective of a sunrise or what the sun's actually doing, it's okay for me to use the term sunrise, right, even though it doesn't actually rise.
Right.
You know, re-rotate it and see it. But if I can describe things any way I want, if I'm trying to describe it technically, I don't use that terminology. But if I'm trying to describe it to you to understand what I mean, I can use a totally different phrase.
Okay.
The book of Leviticus was not trying to give a scientific description of what a rabbit is. It was telling people what they can and can't eat. And it looks like the rabbit chews its cud, but the Bible still didn't want people to eat, or God didn't want people to eat the rabbit back then.
Right.
And so he said, look, even though it chews its cud, which it doesn't really, but this is not a science book. He says, even though it appears to you like it chews its cud, don't eat it. We find out now, it doesn't actually chew its cud. So God was preventing them from making a mistake.
Right.
And so it's perfectly acceptable literature to advise Israel about eating rabbits based on the fact that they appear to eat their cud.
Right. Well, they eat their own dung. Why would you want to eat a rabbit?
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's disgusting.
Okay. Some rabbit meat.
Okay, we got a few more things coming up. We're going to have at least a couple minutes at the end of this show, mm-hmm, that are online at truthrevolution.tv.
Right on. Bonus.
So join us online, truthrevolution.tv. You can get the show. You can get truth shots, which are...
Yeah, little two-minute clips. Either, they'll come in audio or maybe just...
Or video, or written.
Have we done video? We haven't done video yet.
For a while. We've done video. But basically, you can get on there and get these truth shots. Whenever we hear something interesting, we're going to throw one of these things on there.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, oh, dude, that's really cool. I don't want to wait till Sunday to have to put it on air,
right,
so I'm going to record it right now. And they just come on throughout the week whenever we feel inspired to throw one on there. Right. So, also, come on out to Revolution Church this morning.
That's coming up in about 15 minutes.
10:15 a.m. Revolution Church, right across from Ace Hardware on South Street. We're going to be rocking out this morning. And hey, we got a Christmas service on Christmas Eve.
Right, you don't want to miss that.
Christmas Eve, 6 p.m., be at Revolution Church. It's a great Christmas Eve service. You can still dress casual. Come out, hear some rocking Christmas music. It's only going to be like 45 minutes long. We're going to respect that time for you guys on Christmas right. Eve. But come out to church, hear a short message by me, some rock and Christmas music, and yeah, it'll be a good time. Real quick, real brief, and be
done. It's always a good time here.
It's always a good time here. It's going to be a good time in 15 minutes, so get your butt out the door, over to Revolution Church right now, and when you get home, get on to truthrevolution.tv.
Right. See you next week.
Truth Revolution.
We're back.
Thanks for joining us here on truthrevolution.tv, the website.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, go to the front of the page, and you'll see Truth Shots on the left side.
Right.
All right, I just want to point that out to you. You can go there and see those Truth Shots. Check back every now and then and see if there's any new ones. We don't have a regularly scheduled time for that. They're going to be totally random.
Which is a lot like our church.
Squirrel! All right, a few more things. Just some Bible contradictions to throw out there for people. When did Jesus cleanse the temple? Because John chapter 2 says that Jesus did it very early in his ministry. I mean, he's in the second chapter of John, so it had to be really early.
Right.
But in the book of Mark, it's not until chapter 11.
That should be a long time
later. Long time later, years later, possibly. So which one is it? Well, we were talking about dialect, the genre. And you have to understand the genre that John is writing in. John is not writing chronologically. He's writing by theme. He organizes his book into different thematic elements.
You know what? I never noticed that.
I know. Because he speaks as though he's giving it in chronology. Mm-hmm. This and then this and also this. But he's really categorizing these things by theme, not by chronology. Now, he starts, you know, early in Jesus' ministry. And he ends with Jesus' death and resurrection. Because that would be really confusing to put those backwards.
Right.
But generally speaking, he's ordering by theme, not by chronology. Was, believe it or not, that was not an uncommon thing for Jews to do. That wasn't an uncommon thing for people to do back then.
Right.
We organize by theme all the time.
That's true.
Just go to Wikipedia. The entire thing is thematically organized.
Right.
There is, in our encyclopedias, we don't organize thematically. We don't organize chronologically. We organize
alphabetically? Alphabetically?
Alphabetically.
And our newspapers are done the same way.
Newspapers are organized thematically.
You know, I got the sports section. That's right. The business section.
Right. And John didn't do it as explicitly as a newspaper did, but right. There's nothing wrong with ordering thematically. You just have to know that they're doing that. Otherwise, you think it's some kind of contradiction. Right. So
that could be real confusing.
Yeah. All right. In Matthew 1:20, an angel speaks to Joseph about a baby being born. About baby Jesus. But in Luke 1:28, the angel speaks to Mary. Well, which one is it?
That's a bona fide contradiction.
Now, but believe it or not, this is like an actual contradiction that some atheist websites put up there. Mm-hmm. Like, oh no, which one is it? How about this? I have a crazy idea, Dave.
Don't get crazy.
It was both of them.
Oh, he got crazy.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's just not even commonsensical.
Commonsensical. At least we didn't organize this alphabetical.
Right.
In Luke 4, verses 5 to 9, Satan takes Jesus up to a high place and shows him all the kingdoms of the world. But because the world is round, this is impossible, no matter how high it is.
Gee.
What's going on? Satan couldn't have shown Jesus all the places of the world from a high point.
He flattened the earth out himself. And maybe he pulled out a map.
Yeah, right. But see, we have to understand the genre of literature here. And the genre that is being expressed here is a periphrasis, which is adding superfluous words to expand the message. It's kind of like hyperbole.
I do that all the time.
You're trying to make the point that the devil was offering something quite attractive.
Right.
You know, if I said, I took Dave up on top of Revolution Church, and I pointed to all the buildings around Salina and said, dude, if you give me $5, they're yours.
Done.
All right. Now, if if I said that, you wouldn't literally think that I meant that I pointed at every single building.
Yeah, like your house.
Yeah. You would just know that I meant in general. I took him up in this tall building and I was showing him, look, right. This can be yours. That was the point of it.
For $5, I'm there.
And the whole point of me saying I showed him every building was to get across how big of a deal this was.
Right.
Same thing. Satan showed Jesus all the kingdoms of the world. The point wasn't that he showed him all the kingdoms. The point was that he's making this a really attractive deal. All right. Final one. You ready for our online thing here?
Do it.
Okay. The final one is in Deuteronomy 5:16. It says to honor your father and mother. And the punishment is actually death, we find out in a different place mm-hmm. if you don't obey. But Jesus said in Matthew 10, 35 to 37, that he wants to turn children against their parents.
He did.
I can't believe Jesus did that.
He did.
Bad Jesus.
Isn't that where he who does not hate his parents cannot follow me?
It's actually a little bit different than that. You know, it's saying, I did not come to bring peace on earth, but I came to bring, you know, turn parents, children against parents right. and brother against sister and all that sort of stuff.
And what is that?
Well, this is the genre, again, is important because we're talking about dialect. He's not giving a command. He's not saying, I command you to disobey your parents. He's telling you a description of what will happen.
I see.
He came and this will happen.
Right.
You know, it's like, I came and this radio show will get broadcast. Like, I didn't make a command. I'm just saying this is going to be the result right. of what I've done. And so that's how you have to take it. Come back next week on air with Truth Revolution, 9:30 in the morning on KSAL. And come on out to Revolution Church for Christmas Eve.